One of the most famous midrashim that we encounter in the Medrash Eicha Rabbati is found in this week's Parsha of Vayetze. It's a medrash of how when the Jewish people were going into exile and Yirmiyahu HaNavi tries to wake up the Avos, the forefathers, Moshe Rabbeinu, to cry for the Jewish people and to plead on their behalf that Hashem have mercy on them. And each one comes before God with an argument of saying how they were Moser Nefesh, how they gave so entirely of themselves in different aspects of their lives for the sake of God. And in that tzchus, in that merit, whether it's the Akedah Yitzchak, whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu going, leading the people in the desert, and very various major items that were done, God should have mercy on the people. And the Medrash tells us, and this is found in source number 2a, Kafsa Rachel Imenu. It's as if Rachel Imenu's voice was then heard. She jumps up into the arena and she says, Ribono Shalolam, you know that Yaakov loved me with boundless love, and that he served my father for 7 years that he could marry me. And when our wedding day came, my father decided to put my sister in my place, but I was not jealous of her. If I, who am nothing but ashes and dust, was not jealous of my rival, how could you, master of the universe, be jealous of idols worshipped by the Jews, which are but naught? And indeed, we know, and this is a very famous parak, we read this out, Torah Rosh Hashanah, that Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, as if Kivyochol Hashem says, Rachel, mini kolech mi bechi veinayach medima, Rachel, stop from your weeping. It will be in your schus, in your merit, v'shavu banim l'tvulam, the people return back to their borders. V'shavu merit soyev, they'll return back from the borders of their enemy. What was this major monumental act that Rachel Imenu did that was able to kivyochol sway the heavenly din, the heavenly judgment, to allow mercy to enter in, that although we're going into galus, there is a promise that we will one day return? And what was it about Rachel Imenu's act that was different from all the other actions? What was it about the Mesirut HaSimanim? What was it about that night when Yaakov Avinu had made up special signs with Rachel, said Lavan would not trick him, and Rachel Imenu gave over these signs to Leah that she should not be embarrassed? What was it in that action that was so great, that was so tremendous, that it's in that tzchus, in this merit, that Hashem promises Rachel Imenu that your children will return one day back to the land? That is our overall question for today. And again, as I say almost by every shiur, and I can't but emphasize this enough, we're going to see many, many ideas of Mirtz Hashem today, but as many as ideas as we're going to see, there's so much more to be learned and recognize that we're just mamish scratching the surface. The second question, and all three questions are really connected to this one idea of giving over these simanim, giving over these signs, is later in our parsha, and this is source number 3, little Reuven goes out and he collects dudoyim, he collects some type of flowers, which they say have some type of fertility component to them, and he brings them to his mother. And Rachel Imenu, who sees these dudoyim, these flowers, says, can I have please some of these flowers? To which Leah Imenu responds. She says, was your taking my husband insignificant? Hama'at kachtech et ishi vilakach gam et duda'ei b'ni, and now to even take my son's duda'im? And Rachel said, therefore he shall lie with you tonight in return for your son's duda'im. Obviously, there's a lot to be said about this particular section. We'll talk a drop more about this next week when we talk about Kever Rachel and the whole idea of why Rachel Imenu is not buried in Hebron. So we'll touch on this pasuk as well. But the obvious question when we look at this pasuk is, how could Leah Imenu, who we know was a greater level of sitkus, according to some of Farshim, than even Rachel Imenu. Leah Imenu was a tremendous person. How could she have the audacity to say to Rachel Imenu, Hama'akach techet ishi, it's not enough you've taken my husband? Who gave her that husband? Who was the one who was Moshe the Simanim? Who gave her over the signs that she was able to marry Yaakov? Was it not Rachel? From where does Leah come and say, and is it not enough you take my husband? You want my the flowers as well? How does Leah even come to say such a thing? And our final question is, after this incident in 4a, the Torah tells us that Hashem remembered Rachel, Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel, and God hearkened to her, and he opened her womb, and she conceived and gave birth to the son whose name was Yosef. Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel, and Hashem remembered Rachel, asks Rashi in 4b, what was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered? And Rashi gives a number of answers. The first answer he gives, Zachar la shemasra simaneha la'achota. He remembered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered, how 14 years earlier she had given over the simanim, she had given over the signs to her sister. So the obvious question is, this was an act that was done 14 years before. Only now it's remembered? Why wasn't it remembered earlier? What happened now that changes the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu now remembers it? These are our questions for today. What was this great act of giving over these signs on that wedding night that Leah should not be embarrassed? Because Rachel knew that those private signs, those secretive signs between her and Yaakov, if Leah would not know those signs, then Leah would be humiliated, would be embarrassed, and Yaakov would know that he was being fooled and this wasn't Rachel, this was Leah. What was so great about giving over these signs that made her worthy of being redeemed and remembered in her merit? Again, question number two is, how could Leah have said, it's not enough you take my husband? Who gave her this husband? And question three, only why now does Hashem remember the simanim? I'd like to try to look at this basically on two levels. And obviously within the two levels, there's going to be a lot of sub-levels because there's a lot of beautiful ideas that are found in this section. Many ideas, many, many ideas to learn for our lives. To introduce the first answer, the first approach of what was so special about this giving over the simanim, we need to recognize an idea that we've spoken about in the past, the Nesiva Shalom's introduction to Shar HaMidos, where he points out that in the Pasuk of La'avat Hashem in Source 5, Elokecha v'lalecha b'chol drachav, to love God and to walk in His ways. What are walking in God's ways? If God is merciful, we should be merciful. And explains the Chazal on this, it's not just enough to do acts of mercy or acts of beloved kindness, but rather el tzarich liyot etzem shorachum ve'etzem shochanum v'zed derech Hashem. But rather we need to be intrinsically, inherently a person of mercy, a person of kindness. That has to be the essential part of who we are. And that's why in source number 6, Rav Chaim Vital points out b'sifra shari kedusha that shilkach lo nimnu amidos b'tariyak amitzvos, the midos, our quality traits, our good midos, are not mentioned as part of the 613 mitzvos because they are hakdama l'Torah. They are the prerequisite for Torah. The hema merkava l'Torah. The ein adam masik Torah kedosha kodem shitaher midotav. It's impossible to access Torah without good midos. And it gives a wonderful mashal, and I think this is the mashal we need to keep in mind. In Source 7, it's a mashal, it's an analogy of a tree that has a lot of branches and a lot of fruit. And we know that the fruit and the branches get its yinika, get its source of sustenance from the shorashim, from the roots. Even though you don't see the roots is what's sustaining the tree. Our roots are our midos. Theirs are our shorash, those are our key. And that's why the Nesiva Shalom goes on to explain that if there's a problem in a particular branch and a particular fruit, so you just cut it off, but the tree can regenerate itself. But if there's a problem in the roots, so that affects the entire tree. And that's what we have to understand, that all of the mitzvot we do, whether it's chesed, whether it's ben adam l'makom, it's all coming from our midos. Do we do mitzvot? And we'll talk more about this in Yirtzeh Hashem today. so that other people can see it, so we can brag about it. Or it's gaiva, it's yuara. Is this the essence of our roots? Or do we have humility? And that everything we do, all the fruits, all the branches, all that come out of our tree, will be done in a radically different type of way. Mitos, quality traits, is the essential aspects of Torah. So on this we can explain a very interesting insight in the next page in source number 8 from Rav Grossbard in Dashraga, where he explains very interesting different ideas among the commentators, whether when Rachel Imenu gave over those simanim, gave over those signs, did she envision that she was going to marry Yaakov Avinu? And there are indeed, and we'll talk about this, some of Farshim who say that no. In her mind, she thought perhaps she was going to marry Esav, and this was going to be it. And that was the greatness of her act. Says at that Shraga, no. These women were nevios, these women were prophetess. And she knew that she was also going to marry Yaakov Avinu. That wasn't the issue. That wasn't the problem. But rather, in source number 9a, let's learn together. But what we see about Rachel Imenu is how exemplary her midos were. Because when you're dealing with someone with midos ra'os, with negative character traits, negative character traits affects a person's eyes. They blind a person from the truth. And they warp a person's mind. Adam, a person, let's say a person has clarity from prophecy. But if it's going to go, run counter as midos, then it doesn't matter what he knows in his logic. In nevua, a person follows their midos. The bottom line is, even though a person may know something with utmost clarity, when that knowledge comes in conflict with a person's baser desires and needs, so it's usually our desires and needs that come to the fore. What was the greatness of Rachel Imenu? Rachel Imenu, Zoe Gadluta, jumping a paragraph, Sherachel Imenu, he nagal fiasecha vanavua velonichna alamidochala. Her greatness was in the fact that she was able to control her midos. She gave over the simani. And she didn't say, you know what? Oh, I would like to marry Yaakov first. Yeah, I know I'll marry him eventually. So my sister gets a little bit embarrassed. You know, but after all, I'm the chosen wife. I should be first. She doesn't go on like normal midos of what do I desire, what do I want. But she sees clearly that God has promised her to marry Yaakov Avinu. She will marry him. Her focus is now on understanding this and being able to take this knowledge and being able to apply it to her midos and being able to give over these signs, not to embarrass her sister, to be very conscientious of the way her sister is feeling. And he notes, very often in life, we see that a person can't do this. One example of this is in source number 10. An example having to do with davening, Rav Matthisiyahu Salomon, where he speaks about how often you see a person who will run out of shul to run to a business meeting. Why is he running out of shul? Because he has to invest his time in the business meeting. But doesn't he know intellectually, spiritually, rationally, that his business meeting is predicated on his davening? And his only success is to the extent that God allows him success. That's irrelevant. Right now, all he has in front of his mind is greed, is money. The fact that everything's dependent on tefillah, on prayer, is secondary. All he wants right now is to be able to cut the best deal possible. And my friends, this is what happens to us very often in our lives as well. We may know logically that a person doesn't get what they don't need, and that if somebody else has something, it's because they deserve it, and you don't need this thing right now. We may know that. We may know the Ma'amarei Chazal by heart, backwards and forward. But when that person gets that which we want, kinna, jealousy, suddenly raises its head. And it's very hard for us to subdue this. The greatness of Rachel Imenu, in what schud is Rachel Imenu remembered, is that she is teaching us, and Chodesh Baruch Hu Kivyachol, the Medrash is teaching us, how important it is to have shlita on our midot, how important it is not to know things intellectually, but to be able to practice what you preach, practice what you learn. And my friends, that's one of the greatest challenges that all of us are faced with day in and day out of our lives. We know that it does not help to scream at our children. They just tune out. We do it anyway. Can we control our midos, yes or no? The greatness of Rachel Imenu was the controlling of her midos in being able to give over those signs, and her concern, and her primary concern, is that of her sister. And with this, the Shvile Pinchas in source number 12 explained why it's specifically giving over these signs, that she is rewarded in that merit, that the Geula, the redemption, will come. And he explains that we know that what is holding back our redemption right now from the Churban Bayis Sheni is, as Chazal tell us in source 12, that even though they were Osek B'Torah B'Mitzvos B'Gemilus Chesed, Mipnei Ma'acharev, why was the base of Mikdash, the second one, destroyed? Because it had Sinas Chinam, it had baseless hatred. And this is the way to build back the base of Mikdash, is through proper midos, its proper love, through Avas Chinam, through Zichuch HaMidos Shayal Rachel Imenu, the arrow in source 12. It is this perfection of her quality traits. It's this ability to work on one's midos, to love another, not to only, you know things intellectually, but to practice this loving kindness, to practice our positive qualities on others. This is what is going to bring back, ultimately, the next geula. And 14, Hine ki kein rak avat chinam kazot sharachel imenu. The paradigm of this avas chinam, of this baseless love, of this enormous love, is the paradigm of Rachel Imenu. Yesh v'kocha lifroz ko mechitzot barzel shel agolos shesharsha mitzat sinas chinam shesharsha ben Yisrael. And it's this act of saying, even though I want my husband, I'm not going to embarrass my sister. I'm going to show real love and give over those simanim, give over those signs to her sister. That has the ability to break down, has the ability to knock down this mechitza of barzel, this separation of iron, this iron wall that's blocking the Mashiach from coming. And this was the schus that she had over the Avos HaKadoshim, over Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as their actions was. What is it that ultimately going to bring back the people? It's the paradigm, it's the example of Rachel Imenu. And this is the lesson we need to learn. With this in mind, that we understand that Rachel Imenu had these tremendous midos tovos, and that she was able to work on these and purify these. And that's the schus that we're ultimately going to be redeemed when we follow in her wake. We can appreciate in source 15 what the Leish Shalom Rav Shadron points out, based on the Balei Musar, how Leah Imenu could have said, Hama'ad kach techet ishi, how could you have taken my husband? And he knows, let's learn together in 15. Omnam gadol hayas chuta kedam mesirut ha-nefesh le'en shiur le'en arok. No one's denying that the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, was a tremendous act. But you know what? There's something about giving over these signs that was even greater. Even though the Akedah, we can't even imagine it, the Mesiris Nefet, Avraham Avinu ready to give up his son, Yitzchak Avinu ready to be sacrificed. Mikol makom kolikar nisayon elaya, the asterisk in 15, ela b'sha'at ma'aseh. The challenge The whole incident came to the fore only b'shas ma'isa at that moment, perhaps 3 days before, but it was very limited. Once Yitzchak Avinu came down from the altar, the nisayon, the challenge was over. And likewise by all the other stories that were mentioned. Ach nisyonasha Rachel, what was the greatness of Rachel Imenu's act that made it so worthwhile? What was the greatness of her midos? Listen closely. Lo nigmar lachar shemasrata simanim lelei achuta. It didn't end with just giving over those signs on the wedding night. Velo nishlam chastasha Rachel b'msirata simanim lelei agreda. Ella, but rather, ko yemei chayah shal Rachel amda v'nisayon zeh shemisirata simanim lelei b'gvuro ba'omet. She lived with this challenge constantly. V'hainu sharei zeh shintafsher lelei l'nasei l'yakov hayah b'schut shivitra l'Rachel. You can imagine that Leah must have walked around embarrassed every time she saw Rachel. That is why Rachel birtzotali gmali machota chesed shalem v'amiti. That is why the test of Rachel didn't end with just giving over the simanim. Because if Leah at all felt embarrassed, oh, I can't look at you in the face, look what you've done for me, then there is something, there's some pigam, there's some defect, kivyachol, in that chesed. And therefore, she did a chesed, she'ena makabel margisha su chesed imo. The greatness of Rachel Imenu was that she did a chesed where the people didn't even realize, where Leah didn't even realize this chesed. She gave over the simanim, and she gave her, and this is the key, the hargasha. The gamlo nichna la hargasha shasta chesin ra. She gave it over in a way where you didn't feel, she didn't, Leah didn't feel beholden to her. But she rather treated Leah the whole time as she's the ikar bayit. She gave Leah this feeling that she's special. And she never held it over her head. She never said, oh, remember the sea money? Remember how you owe me one? Now, I want to pay it back now. No, now, it's a good time to pay me back. No. But rather, her whole life, she worked on this nisayo, but oz ubegvura, that she should never feel beholden to her. And how do we know that she was successful in the parsha by the Dudayim? When Leah says, "Hamaat kachzek l'dishi," and now you're going to take me to da'i b'ni, how could Leah say such a thing? Leah could only say such a thing if Rachel Imenu gave her that feeling this whole time that this husband belonged to you and you deserved this husband. And it wasn't a favor I gave you the simanim. It was my schus to give you the simanim. It was only a Rachel Imenu who gave over a chesed in such a way that Leah did not feel beholden to her, could Leah then make such a comment to her. And that, my friends, is what we're speaking about. What is the great schus of Rachel Imenu? It's this quality of midos, this quality of character traits, where the roots of the tree are so strong, where it's not just doing somebody a favor and then they feel beholden to you, but it's a complete chesed, where the person doesn't even realize how much they are indebted to you. That, my friends, was the greatness of Rachel Imenu. That's the Avas China. That's what's going to break down the iron walls that separate us and the redemption. So if we understand the greatness of Rachel Imenu, and we understand why in this chus, the Geula, the redemption is going to come, this mid of Avas China, and we understand how great this giving over the simanim was, that Leah herself never feels beholden and can speak in such an audacious type of way. So the final question we have on this first level is, why only now does the Kadosh Baruch Hu respond to her tefillah in the schus of the simanim that happened 14 years earlier? It's a very powerful piece in the Sefer HaTorah LaMelech by Rav Pam Zatzal, where he speaks about a great vort by the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. We say in the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim that Hashem is Karachum V'chanun Erchapayim, and he's Verav Chesed V'emeth. He's abundant in kindness and truth. The Gemara points out that these two attributes are contradictory. If Hashem acts with truth, which means absolute justice, how can he be described as abundant in kindness? Which means that he mercifully tips the scale of justice toward the side of undeserving merit. And there are different answers that are given. The answer that Rav Pam gives, and I think it's a very fascinating answer, is the asterisk in 13. Perhaps the answer is that there are times when Hashem wants to bestow extra kindness and blessing on a person. But he's undeserving of this. The Midas HaDin resists this and wants to prevent this act of Chasdei Hashem from taking place. What does Hashem do? He gives the person an opportunity to do chesed for somebody else and thereby rightfully earn the chesed that Hashem wants to bestow upon him. This may be the deeper meaning of the above-cited pasuk. And he will give you mercy, meaning a chance to do chesed, and thereby he will be merciful to you, give you the chesed you need. The Rav Chesed Be'emet, Hashem wants to give you chesed, but Be'emet, you don't deserve it. So Rav Chesed Be'emet means Hashem gives you a chesed. He gives you an opportunity to do an act of kindness. And it will be in the merit of that act of kindness that Be'emet, now God can do according to strict justice, this kindness that he wants to give you. If Hashem wants to do chesed for someone who doesn't have the merit to deserve it, Hashem in 17 gives them the opportunity to do chesed for someone else and thereby be deserving of Hashem's chesed. Therefore, the attributes of chesed and emes work together, and both are the expression of Hashem's mercy. And this, he says in 18, is what perhaps Rashi means by quoting the Medrash. And God remembered Rachel and listened to her and opened her womb. Rachel had been childless and remained without any part in building the eternity of Klal Yisrael. And what schut was she answered? The Medrash says it was because of her silence on what should have been Rachel's wedding night. Her father Lavan deceived Yaakov and substituted Leah for Rachel. Continuing in 19, Rachel realized her sister would be terribly embarrassed and she gave her over the simony. It was this merit that 14 childless years later earned her the merit to become the mother of Yosef and later Binyamin. As the Medrash puts it, Hadin Notain, it was justified that her prayers for children should be answered. Thus, again, one sees this combination of divine attributes of Chesed and Emet. The Chesed of Hashem to Rachel was a direct outgrowth of her doing Chesed with her sister, which translated into Hashem acting with truth and justice and granting her a child. It took superhuman kochos for Rachel to give away her signs to her sister. Had she not done so, she would have remained with nothing. This is a powerful lesson of how a person should try not to avoid opportunities for chesed which come his way. He should avoid the common reaction of grumbling under his breath and muttering, "Why do they always have to bother me? Why do I have to constantly be bothered? Why do they always have to ask me?" Who can know the hidden aspects of the secrets of Hashem? It could be that this request is the key which unlocks the heavenly storehouses of chesed for this person so that Hashem can shower upon him his infinite blessings. When opportunity knocks, we need to answer it. I think the beautiful part, many beautiful parts of Rav Pam's Tzatzal's piece, but one of the beautiful parts is we don't know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's timetable. 14 years later, it's in the schus of these simanim that Rachel is remembered. And Rachel Imenu, for 14 years, doesn't mention this schus of the simanim. She davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 14 years earlier, had given her that opening. And then Hashem, Davar B'Tol Matol, Hashem understands when this perfect timing will be. Sometimes we can do an act of chesed, and we say to ourselves, look, I'm davening so much, I'm doing so much chesed, why isn't God answering me now? And the answer is because we don't know Kadosh Baruch Hu's timetable. But don't at any point lower or diminish the amount of tzila and the amount of chesed that we do, because it's ultimately going to be in that tzchus that we're going to be redeemed. But Hashem has his time. You know, just a short maisa that I just read for my Kabbalat Shabbat story this week about Hashem's timing, which I think is appropriate for this idea of Rav Pam. Very bekitzer, there was a Talmud of Rav Moshe, who was very close to Rav Moshe. He was a student of Rav Moshe for many years, Rav Moshe Feinstein Tzatzal. And then he gets married and moves down to Miami. So anytime Ramosha would come down for a parlor meeting, obviously he hosted it. And one time when Ramosha spoke, he met this other fellow, his name was Reb Kalman, who came to the parlor meeting, and they got to talking. And soon, let's call him Reb David, the Talmid of Reb Moshe. The names are pseudonyms anyway. So Reb David, who hosts this parlor meeting, becomes very friendly with Reb Kalman. They become very, very good friends, chavri nafesh. But the one thing that really perturbed Reb David was that Reb Kalman and his wife were childless. And Reb David used to go a number of times a year to Reb Moshe to learn by him, to consult with him. And every time he would go, he'd ask that Reb Moshe would daven for his friend Reb Kalman. It was like 5 years going a couple of times that he keeps on asking Reb Moshe to daven. That the fifth year, Reb Kalman becomes a little bit more forceful. And he says, Reb Moshe, I want you to forgive me, but I come from a Hasidic background. And, you know, a Rebbe is a Rebbe, and a Talmid is a Talmid. And sometimes a Talmid asks a Rebbe for something. He says, I'm begging you, please daven, promise me that my friend Reb Kalman will have a child. Reb Moshe looks at him, and this is the greatness of a Gadol B'Yisrael, and says, don't you think from the time that you asked me to daven for your friend that I've been davening for him every single day? Obviously I have. But Reb David was very forceful. He says, but please. So Reb Moshe says, it should be this year. And indeed, Reb Kalman had a little girl 10 months later. And the end of the story is that Reb Kalman's daughter married one of Reb David's sons. And ultimately, they became a chutanim. What's the point of the story? That daughter needed to be born at that time, to be married to this particular boy. We don't see the larger picture in life. But certain things happen to happen at certain times because the Kadosh Baruch Hu sees the entire map. We look at it in a very, very tiny cubicle, and we miss out often in seeing the larger picture. That, my friends, is the first level. The greatness of Rachel Imenu, why was the Natschus that the redemption is going to come, why Leah could say what she said, and the 14 years is sometimes what the time we have to wait for Reb Chesed V'Emet. On the next level, there's a very interesting piece that Reb Goldwich brings down of what was the greatness of the Simanim, the Mesiras HaSimanim. So the Sefer Vatalina Kulana quotes Reb Goldwich, and this is in 22b, and then 22a, that it wasn't just the Mesiras HaSimanim, it just wasn't giving over the signs. There was something much greater that Rachel Imenu did. And that is Rachel Imenu understood that the first person that marries Yaakov Avinu is going to marry, as we spoke about last week, that aspect of Yaakov Avinu which represents the Avodat HaPnim, the inner world. And whoever marries Yaakov Avinu next is going to be marrying the Esav part, the part he took on later. Rachel Imenu understood that she was destined to marry Yaakov Avinu first. When she gave over the simanim, she's not only giving over signs, she's giving over her entire tafkid in life. She taught Leah Imenu the Avodat HaPnim, the inner world, which Emir Tzashem again will see next week, the ramifications of that and where they were buried. And she takes on the Avodah Sachot. She takes on the external world. She is the one who's ultimately going to have the Yosef, who's the Mashpir, who is the one who provides the food for the whole land. What was the greatness of Rachel Imenu giving over the Simanim? What was it that was able to, you know, break down the heavens, so to speak? Is Rachel Imenu was able to say, I'm ready to give over my entire tafkid in life. I'm ready to switch roles with my sister in order for my sister not to be embarrassed. For somebody to have that ability to be able to say what was rightfully mine, I'm giving over to someone else. Wow, that's greatness. Chazal defined this act of Rachel Imenu in two different ways. The first way is found in the Gemara Megillah in Source 24. B'schar sniu shaitaba b'rachel zachta v'yatsa mimena sha'ul. In the merit of the snius, literally translated as the modesty of Rachel, she merited to have Sha'ul, who's a modest person, as well as Esther Amalka. So ask Rosh Shirim Rav Reis, he says, I would have called this act an act of chesed, an act of hatava, an act of rachamim. You're going to call this an act of sneos, of modesty? Where is your modesty in this whole thing? In fact, according to some commentators, Rachel Imenu was under the bed speaking for Leah that night. So answering for her, said Jacobina wouldn't even know it was Leah. This seems to be the opposite of sneos. So what is the definition of sneut? So we understand, Rav Reis points out in 25, the Balei Musar explain, Chovat Adam, the asterisk in 25, Lishtadel Kechol Hafshar, Limanami Pirsomet Umirav Tanut. A person has to try as much as possible to stay out of the limelight. Masim Tovim Chayvim Lipatzea Lishmam, Mishum Shitovim Heinam, V'lo Bishvil Limshok Tzumat Lev Minachut. We need to do actions because this is the right thing to do and not to be able to draw attention. And this is what Rabbi Frantz speaks about in Rabbi Frantz in print. Sneus 29, in fact, encompasses a number of closely related ideas. We're told to walk. Micha tells us to walk in Sneus, Vatzea Lecha Ima Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's nothing less than a demand that we emphasize the divine image within us, the soul which was taken from under the Kiseh Kavod. Walking humbly and thoroughly before God can be also understood as walking privately before Him. To fulfill the command, then, is to guide our behavior solely according to this recognition, that our every act is in the presence of God. Thus, whether we are in our inner sanctum or in a crowd of people is irrelevant, for there's ultimately one judge of our action, and His is the only approval we seek. This attitude radically distinguishes us from the prevailing society, for whose members the approval of others is the only source of validation. We live today in what may be termed a public relations society. If an event is not recorded in the media, it is as if it did not occur at all. And in fact, it's interesting. The Balei Musar, based on the Yerushalmi and other sources, speak very harshly about those who do actions in order to call attention to what one is doing. There's a great Hasidic vort that's found on the next page where it says, let's take a look together, the Admor, source 33, the Divrei Shmuel from Slonim, which say, Sha'aseh ma'asim bishvil litna'ot b'nei ha'briot. When you do something only to, you know, be boastful and prideful in front of others, you know, everyone see what a great tzaddikus you are. So he goes on to say, after 120, when you stand before the Beis Din Shamala, when you want a schar, you want a reward for those deeds, they're going to tell you, go to the people in front of whom you did these things in order to impress them, and they'll give you the reward. It's a very harif, a very powerful statement, because really, you didn't do it for God, you did it for them. So since you did it for them, they're the ones who should really be giving you the reward, not God. And obviously, we know the litmus test to this, my friend, and it's a very hard one, but a very important one, is to try as much as possible to do acts of chesed without anyone knowing, without telling anybody. Obviously, there's a balance in life. Your children need to see you do acts of chesed. But even when your children see you do acts of chesed, you don't need to boast about it. It's something that's just part and parcel of the household that they live in. It's like the air that they breathe. These are the things that you do. But it's crucial that you don't then, after, you know, you do whatever it is, you know, you visit somebody in the hospital, that you call up all your friends and you say to them, you know, when I was in the hospital today visiting so-and-so, oh, you went to the hospital to visit so-and-so. Wow, you drove all the way down and you spent 2 hours? Wow, what a tzaddikus you are, right? We like to hear, and then you call up the next friend, and you like to hear the same things over and over again. It's human nature to get validation. But the only validation we need, real sneus, is the idea that only a Kadosh Baruch Hu needs to know what we have done. And this is the real sense that it was done, L'shem Shamayim. My friends, this leads us to a radically different interpretation of what the Mesiras HaSimanim giving over the simanim are all about, that gives us a sense of what was the sneus, what was the modesty in the act that Rachel Imenu did. And this is a very interesting chiddush of Rav Shadron himself in the Leif Shalom. It's sources 34 through 37. I'll do them outside, but one can be ayin inside and learn them through. It's obviously a much larger piece. Explains Rav Shadron, Rachel Imenu knew that if she was going to tell Lavan about the simanim, or tell Yaakov about that, you know, Lavan was planning on changing things, that would then cause a whole uproar. And that would be against the whole aspect of quietly and privately. So what does Rachel Imenu do? So we know, according to the Balei HaTosfos in 36, the simanim that Yaakov Avinu had between him and Rachel, what were these signs, right? I'm going to give you signs, and you say these signs, I know you're my wife, was the three mitzvos that a woman is special for. Women need the chadla and adlaka saner. So what did Rachel Imenu do? She said to Leah, now you're about to go into the chuppah, let me teach you what a bas Yisrael needs to know. And she taught her these halachas. But here's the key. She never told her that these are the simanim. She never told her that there were signs between me and Yaakov, and I'm giving over these signs. Says Rav Shadron, the sneas of Rachel Imenu was that if she had a private pact between her and Yaakov, this wasn't something she was going to share with others. And she gave over the signs in such a way that Leah Imenu herself never even knew that she got the signs. And this is the sneas, this is the modesty of Rachel Imenu, that she was able to keep this entire event so secretive that even her sister never knew of what she did. And that explains when Rachel Imenu hears from Leah, "Hama'at kachtech et yishiv lakach et duda'ei bini." How could Leah have said this? Doesn't she know that Rachel gave over her husband? The answer is no. She never knew that. She just assumed that this is what's going to be. She's given over these halachas. She says these halachas to Yaakov Avinu. And she never realizes the great sacrifice that Rachel Imenu did. And because she never knew about this great sacrifice, so there's not a lack of a karsa tov, there's not a lack of gratitude by saying, you took my husband, now you're taking the flowers? How could Leah Imenu say this? Because in her mind, it was her husband. In her mind, she never knew about this simanim. That is the sneas. That is the modesty of Rachel Imenu, that she kept this within herself all of these years. That sneas, that act, as we saw earlier by the Bali Musar, was enough to shake the heavens. But you know what, my friends? That explains why you always find in Chazal 39, they say, Mesiros Hasimanim, giving over the signs, and never Gilta Hasimanim, to reveal the signs. Because Rachel, according to this, Rachel Imenu never revealed the signs. She just gave over the signs. If that's one level of Rachel Imenu's greatness, is her sneas, is her modesty. Modesty meaning not drawing attention. Modesty meaning acting in a private, humble way, where it's just between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those were the only ones who knew what she did. It wasn't something she even told her sister about. If that is one of the greatness of Rachel Imenu, the second is the Medrash, which speaks about, in 41, the Gen Shvile Pinchas, Ein lecha na'am im Rachel. There's no one as beautiful as Rachel. And because of that, Yaakov wanted to marry her. And the Medrash says that Yaakov would send presents for 7 years to Rachel. And Lavan took these presents and gave them to Leah. And that's why Leah really believed that she was meant to marry Yaakov. And Rachel was shoteket. Rachel Imenu never said a word to Yaakov, how she never got those presents, and it went to Leah. And that's why Chazal tell us that Rachel, who was Tafsa Pelech HaShtika, what was the greatness of Rachel Imenu? One greatness was her Tznius. The second greatness was her Shtika, her ability to be silent. And that's why she has a son, Binyamin, whose stone is Yeshvat. There is a mouth. He knows about the sale, but he doesn't say anything. Her son, her descendant is Shaul, who doesn't tell that he became king. Esther, Amalka, who doesn't reveal her national identity. But says the Shvilei Pinchas something very powerful. He says, it's not just enough to know how to be quiet. You have to know how to balance speech with silence. 42, V'nei b'inyan ze matzinu. Ba'adam shnei kochol niflaim ha'nugadim ze lo ze. Two contrary kochos. There's a korach ha'dibor and a korach of shtika. There's a time to be quiet and a time to speak. And this is the greatness of Rachel Imenu. When she needs to be quiet, she's quiet about the gifts. When she needs to speak under the bed, that's when she speaks. She knows when to talk, when not to talk. That is why. And 46, when the stone on the breastplate is Yesh Peh, he has a mouth. It's not a stone called Shtika, silence. The ability to know when to be quiet is only appreciated when you know how to speak and when you know how to be quiet. As he brings down in 43, Rabbi Akiva would say, Siyag l'chochma shtika, the fence of wisdom is silence. Because the greatest chochma is to be able to learn from others, to know when to speak and when not to speak. And this is merumas, this is hinted at in last week's parsha, when we spoke about the bracha that Yitzchak Avinu gave Yaakov. And when he felt him, the pasuk says, Hakol kol Yaakov ha'yadayim yedei Esav. Right? The voice is the voice of Yaakov and the hands are the hands of Esav. Source 44, if you look carefully in the Chumash, you'll note that kol, voice, is written once with the vav and once without. Notes of Shilei Pinchas. The kol with the vav is malay when there's a kol of speaking. And there's a kol missing the vav because there's a kol of silence. Yaakov Avinu had a kol. It's not just repeating the word. It's two types of voices. There's a voice of speech and a voice of silence. And that's why Rachel Imenu, who knows how to use these voices so well and when to use them, it's kol b'raman yishma. When her voice is heard weeping, Hashem says, Mini kol lech mibechi, stop from crying. I'm able to tell you to stop from crying because you know how to use your tears well. You know how to use your voice appropriately. Rav Pinkus has a gorgeous essay, and this is the final page, on this koach of shtika and this koach of dibur. It's well worth reading the whole piece in Tiferet Shimshon. I'd just like to draw our attention to a number of very small ideas. He speaks about, there was once a very famous Hasidic Rebbe, Ha'admor Meroshin, who lives around 150 years ago, and his minhag was, when he had a tish, I'm sure many of us have either seen a tish, heard about a tish, so, you know, the Rebbe sits at the head of the table, and all the Hasidim sit around the table, or wherever, and the Rebbe sings, and says Divrei Torah, right, and gives out food, right, we know what a tish is. His minhag was to be quiet. And there was once a non-Jewish janitor who was asked, what did you see at this tish? And he gives a great definition. Let's learn together the end of 48. Ra'iti sham shulchan aruch, I saw a long table, shiudim yoshvim mishnei tzadav, the Jews were sitting on either side, b'rosh ha'shulchan yoshev zakein achad, at the head of the table was sitting an old man, who shall take? He was silent, and listen closely, v'kulam makshivim, and everybody was listening. Wow. To listen to silence. Eza hagdara nifla'a. What great words were said there. Shtika. And he notes that we know what is the greatness of the malachim is they sing shira to Hashem. Kadosh, kadosh, baruch shem. But there's one group of malachim which are called the chashmal. And the chashmal is made up of two words. Chashmal is made up, and this is the end of 49, chash and mal. Chash is, there are times to be silent, and there's times, lemalel, to speak. The chashmal would sometimes be quiet and sometimes speak. And the Gra on this explained that this is Chazarat HaShatz. And I was very taken by this idea in Source 50. I never seen it before. When we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to reach full Shira, which is speech with Shtika. When the Shas, when the Shliach Sipur is saying Shmona Esrei, that's Shira. When we are silent as a Tzibur listening to the Shliach Sipur, that's the Shira of Shtika. That's Chashmal. And then suddenly, like a light bulb came off in my head, why there is such major emphasis among the halachic authority of not speaking during Chazarat HaShatz, not learning during that time, just following in the sitter best with one's hand, not to talk, not to chat, not to do anything but to listen. My friend, we're not sitting passively. There is Shira going on here. There is Shira of Shtika. As the Chazan is saying the Shira of Dibor, we are saying the Shira of Shtika. And there's a power in the Shira of Shtika. When you hear this, you say to yourself, how could you ever open up your mouth in Chazarat HaShatz? You are disturbing the Shira, the song of Shtika. There's a power of silence. Silence is not just passive. There's an active component of silence. And as Rav Pinkus notes in 51, he says, you know where you see this? If a Talmid Chacham, a great scholar, walks into the room, so suddenly people like lower their voices. If the Gadol Hador walks into the room, there's silence. Hush. That silence is pregnant with potential, with respect, with dibur. It says a tremendous amount. We look at silence as passive. Silence is really a dibur in its own right. What was it that shook up the Shamayim? Rachel Imenu knew how to be silent. For 7 years, she never told about the gifts. The night of the wedding night, she never told. And according to the Leib Shalom, she never even told her sister. What powerful shtika. But when it came to being under the bed, she was there. She knew when dibur was necessary as well. And this power of shtika is what the Imre Chemed points out in 53 and 54, is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu remember the simanim right now. Because if we hold that Leah indeed knew, which is most mefarshim, she knew about the Mesiras HaSimanim, and she knew what her sister gave up in order for her to have a husband. And then she says, Hama'ak kachek etishti, etishi, you took my husband, and now you want these flowers? Rachel Imenu should have given it back to her, and given it back to her well. What do you mean I took your husband? Who do you think gave your husband? This was a grand opportunity for Rachel to teach Leah Imenu a thing or two in Mussar. And what is Rachel Imenu's response? Silence. Shtika. And it's this shtika, says Imre Chemed, that she gave the feeling to Leah, you know what, you're right. Vitra ala magia la kedin, this is what you really deserved. When she showed that enormous ability to hold back, and that's what silence is. Sometimes it means not saying something you really want to say. As the Rav Pinkus says so beautifully at the end of 52, he says, every driver knows that the first thing you need to check in your car is to make sure it has brakes. We need to have brakes in our own speech as well. What brakes does Rachel Imenu put in at this place? How many times do we have the opportunity to say that great line? And boy, will it feel good, and it's deserving. And we put the brakes on, the silence. Vayiskor Elokim et Rachel. What was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered? He remembered the Simonim. What went on that for 14 years he didn't remember it? Because now, when Rachel Imenu doesn't use this to lord it over or to teach Leah Imenu a lesson, but she remains silent, and she doesn't use this against Leah, but she's able not to take those simanim, but rather she uses it in vitur, yes, you're right, and she's silent. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you are silent when you had a right to respond. Now I see that giving over the simanim was really this great act. You've proven it, so to speak, in your ability to be silent now. And in that merit now, the silence now is a reflection on what was. You will be redeemed. And as he quotes here in 55 from the Rebbe of Lublin, on our Nusach and our Tefillah, Kizlocher kol nishkachos atahu me'ola, that Hashem, you remembered all that was forgotten from before time. When a person forgets what he great things he's done, then Hashem remembers. But when a person constantly reminds Hashem over and over what the great things he's done, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol doesn't remember them or is not mishalim the schar that a person deserves. What we need to do is to do these great acts, then step off the stage before the applause. So if we just summarize what we've seen, what was the greatness of Rachel Imenu? Many things. On the first level, it's her midos, it's her avasinam, that she overcomes that which she knows logically, intellectually, gives over the simanim. She gives it over in a way which Leah doesn't feel indebted to her. And 14 years later, she's remembered because of Kadosh Baruch Hu has his own clock. On the second level, what was the greatness? Perhaps it was changing her whole role in life. Or perhaps it was giving it over in such a way of sneers where Leah Imenu herself wasn't aware that she had given over the simanim. It's in this chud of sneers and the chud of shtika, the chud of silence, that Rachel Imenu teaches us, the kol kol Yaakov. There are times to speak and there's times to be quiet. There's a time where the Shliach Sibur, the Chazan's going to daven, and there's times that we have to listen. We have to be able to appreciate in life that even though we have those great comebacks, when we're silent, when we have that shtika, then we have been able to reach on some level that chashmal, that level of the malachim. What a wonderful shira that is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we're able to be quiet, we don't give that retort, we don't give that insult, and we're able to say, no, there's a time to speak and a time to be silent. When Rachel Imenu is able to utilize this and say, yes, you believe it's your husband, and I'm going to continue giving you that feeling, and I'm not going to give you back a good retort, that is when Hashem says, yes, what you did is nothing that you want to be remembered. Since you don't want it to be remembered, I, Dafka, will remember it. And in that schus, Rachel Imenu was remembered. Mirza Hashem, my friends, we should be able to follow the examples of Rachel Imenu, of living a life of Mesiras Nefesh, in our midos, in our avas chinam, in our snios, in our private acts, in our shtika. And in all these schus, we should be able to have the fulfillment of the nevuah to Rachel Imenu, Meniko lech mibechi, veinayich midima, that indeed our children return to our borders with Mashiach Tzidkenu.